So we're here at the Warren. It's breezier than it was yesterday, but it's a perfect day to come and see a show at Brighton Fringe. It's not so noisy, it's not so busy, but it doesn't mean there isn't lots of stuff happening in Brighton, which there is. And I'm joined by Liralyn Kay, who's got a very interesting title for her show. Intriguing one, I'd say a bit provocative in a good way, but you're going to say what that title is now.
Many Trump Refugees in One Body.
How did that title come about?
I was in Second City, Toronto, and I can't even remember what the old title was, but I was taking a class in how to put together a solo show, and the teacher said, no, that title doesn't work. And then I said what the show was about, and I said, well, how about Many Trump Refugees in one Body? And the whole room started laughing, and I was like, well, that's my title.
So that is the best reaction, the reaction of the audience. But now let's go under the lid of that title. What's the show about?
Well, it's about Trump's election. And election night in the United States, so many Americans went on the Canadian immigration website that they crashed it. But I'd already been on it for the last month. And then when he was elected, I immediately said to my partner, we're selling the condo and moving to Canada. And my partner hates change of any kind. So, and I've lived in three countries besides Canada. So it was quite a thing for us to figure out how we were going to do that. And then it was also, was Canada going to let us in?
And it's not just the American presidential election that we are constantly questioning, you know, what really went on, and whether if we discover what really went on, we'd have to restage the election. But that's happening in the UK with Brexit, and we're now talking about, you know, companies that were collecting data and influencing us, and budgets that were being spent that were illegal. What's going on?
In the United States?
Well, no, in the world, in a way, because with the rise of social media and the rise of manipulation of the population, I suppose I didn't expect it to go so quickly and easily into politics, even if businesses were doing it.
Well, I think politics will take advantage of whatever they can take advantage of. And my real belief about it is that this is kind of, everything is related to climate change, because we're in a situation where if we don't take action right away, then we're going to make ourselves extinct. And these are the people who are invested in not moving to green energy, in not, like, they're the fossil fuel people. And in the United States, it's capitalism. Greed runs everything.
And particularly oil.
And particularly oil. Yeah. So these people want to kind of keep us where we've been, which is the same people having power and using the same fuel sources that their companies are invested in. And I do think there's also, with this kind of panic and the, I don't know how it is in the UK, but in the United States, it's the rich are getting richer and everybody else is getting poorer. So with that happening, there's a kind of panic. And a lot of people believe that a paternalistic leader will save them from the things that are wrong with their lives, at least middle America, that's what they think. And so that's why they like Trump, because he's about as paternalistic as you can get.
But also what's happening here is, and this is one of my favorite phrases that I write about, which is people's standards are being lower by the grooming of social media. So we become a collusion of mediocrity. And so people actually think they're getting richer because of that manipulation.
Oh, I'm thinking in the United States that people are so desperate and so angry, and particularly, I mean, what we see is the white, lower class, working class, the people who are having to work two and three jobs. They can't predict that their kids are going to have a better life than them no matter what they do. You know, that those people are extremely angry and extremely unhappy.
Now, that creates an interesting challenge for a solo performer, particularly as we are sitting in the Warren. It's a hub. People drink here. People smile here. It's a very light place in lots of ways. All the venues, which are beautiful in their own ways, also you can hear the buses going by and the sirens and so on. So what we've just talked about is heavy stuff. So how do you turn heavy stuff into a show in a place like here?
I actually think my show is very light on its feet. And I, as a as an artist, I make comedy about very serious issues. So I don't do fluff comedy, which, I mean, I love, but it's not what I do. So, I mean, part of the show is really making fun of the marriage of opposites of myself and my partner. Part of the show is making fun of myself. You know, I'm a quick-driven person, you know. I mean, I was calling the realtor and putting the house on the market within a week after the election. I didn't wait to see how it was going to go. And, of course, I make fun of Trump, you know. So, you know, they say in theater that comedy and tragedy are about the same events, but comedy is about how ridiculous our behavior is, and tragedy is about how desperately we feel about things. So we were talking about, you know, how people feel. I think I really talk about how ridiculously we behave.
And so in terms of the early days of that, you decide on the title, you get affirmation from an audience, and then there's a process of that becoming a show here. What will, I'm assuming earlier on, that involves a bit of research about finding out and about separating what you think you know from what is actually, you know, if you can Google and wade through that to the truth. What was that early process of getting this into a script?
I had been, when I wrote the script, I had been living in Canada for 6 months, and part of the comedy of the show is Americans are incredibly arrogant, and so everybody said, well, I'll just move to Canada, as if it was changing states within the same country. Like, I can move wherever I want. I'm an American. So in the process of actually living in Canada and getting an agent, because I'm an actor, I sort of had already lived that research, and I had been shocked by what I was finding. So I had those 6 months were the research. And then in terms of making the show, I wrote the show, and then I started doing what you do, which is, you know, readings before an audience and getting feedback on the writing and trying to see if it's as funny as you think it is, you know.
Yeah. But I'm so interested, when you, a lovely phrase about, you know, light on your feet. How do you take what is, you know, in some ways we can't even imagine what could happen to the world and have the audience laughing?
You know, I mean, there are lines in the show about, I'm thinking there's a line where my partner says, you know, of course I'll come to Canada as long as I'm vested in my retirement at Harvard. And I say, which will take another 2 years. And I say, he'll have blown up the world by then, right? So, I mean, that is in the show, but it's in the context of these two people who are so polarized in their views. The only thing that matters is having my retirement benefit. The only thing that matters is getting the hell out of this country, you know?
And even as I've watched you physically telling me that, you know, the notion of the unbearable lightness of being can sometimes be that if we face it and go through it, then we start moving, and that's when the lightness comes.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, I mean, it's, I am in some ways making fun of the fact that I was terrified out of my mind, and that when he was first elected, I couldn't stop crying. I mean, I cried for a whole day. But you can, when you're, if you have enough distance from that, it becomes funny. It's just not funny when you're in it at the moment, you know? And I do think that, I mean, everything in life as you get older, it either weighs you down or you find a way to get lighter. And I'm all about finding a way to get lighter, you know?
And just give us an insight. So how would this show play out to different audiences? And let's take the three examples here in the UK, in Canada, and back in the United States.
It's a really interesting question. So there's two things about the show. There's the politics of the show, and then there's the personal reveal of the show, because it is a memoir piece, and it is about my relationship and about me. So I have no idea how the personal reveal is going to play out here in the UK. In the United States, if I'm in the liberal Northeast or in California, they're cheering at the stuff of me making fun of Trump. Like, everybody loves that. It's a big release. And we did the show in Boston, And in terms of the personal reveal, we did a talk back afterwards, and people wouldn't leave. So I think the thing about, you know, the message of the show is we have all these borders and we have these rules about who's okay and who's not okay. And the message of the show is, like, tolerance and acceptance and equality for all people, right? I'm a lefty, so that's my thing. In Canada, I think that the show is going to have some challenges because while it's very clear I'm in love with Canada, I'm also not enjoying the immigration process. And it is an immigration process that right now Canada's looking at because Canada stands for diversity, but there are ways that they're keeping certain people out. And I'm challenging that in the show. So I'm not sure that, you know, Canada's going to love that. And that, although it's not directly about Brexit, it has some of the same implications, you know, of who do you keep out and why are you keeping them out? And is it fair to keep them out? And what are you doing to people's lives? I mean, the most serious thing is the United States didn't let people in during World War II, and they got murdered in concentration camps, right? So we have to look at those aspects of immigration no matter where we are.
But I have a sense that how will it play out in the UK is that, as with a lot of things in the world, we will tend to not have a very, at the level of detail, informed view of Trump, even. So we have the gags that everyone laughs at, and it's caricatured. And we've had that with the Middle East and places like that. But actually, there is an opportunity here, and it's a difficult one to be edutainment, as in a way, that we will learn stuff, won't we? And we'll learn at a more nuanced level about what's going on, because you've been there and you've fled from there for very specific reasons, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think the show is educational in a couple ways. I mean, you know, one of the things in the show is that I used to watch The Apprentice. So I ran a multicultural theater company. So I was doing activism in the arts. And, you know, if you do that and you're the artistic director, you just work all the time and you get so fed up with people. And I was like, I loved that he fired people. I loved how rude he was because I was so frustrated. And, like, and then he gets elected and I hate him. I hate what he stands for. So there's even just that of, like, you know, we have a history with him. He's been a public figure in these very different ways. And there's a lot of references to television. And, you know, we're hooked on reality TV. And we glorify these people. Or we live vicariously through them. And then one of them gets power and look what he's doing, you know. But there's also an educational process about why Canada might not take me and who I am. And I think there's that education as well, you know.
From a theatre performance point of view then, is this something that you've kind of scratched in front of audiences and changed? Or has there been a rehearsal process with a director or you in front of a mirror working it through, editing the script, finessing it, even up till now?
We wanted to do a soft opening. It ended up being quite a hard opening because it was very snowy in Boston this winter, so the first night of performance got canceled, but we did perform, and it was a lot of my colleagues in the theater community. Up to that point, we had a three-month rehearsal process with a director, and then I took the show up to Canada, so I rehearsed in Boston. And then I went up to Canada and I rehearsed with Lisa Merchant, who is one of the premier improvisers, so she's all about comedy, in Toronto. And I rehearsed with her, and then we did the show in Boston, now we're doing it here. So it's been quite a rehearsal process. I mean, I have somebody asked me, like, so are you running the lines in your head? I'm like, I have done this so much. You know, I just can stand up and do the show. I, like, without any prep, I know the lines so well. But I'm, you know, I was a producer, so I would never just do a show without an outside eye looking and making sure that, you know, they're telling me if the movement is interesting enough, you know.
This may be an impossible question to even consider, but if... this may be an optimistic thing, but if we ripped aside all the curtains of PR around Trump and maybe even ripped aside the idea that he's a pure demon and that there's a human being there. And he sat at the back of your show and then had an opportunity just to come up to you. What do you think he might say to you?
So I have an opinion about him, and it's kind of diagnostic. I think he's a narcissistic sociopath. And what that means is that he doesn't have much of a capacity, if any, for empathy. So I think he would find the show very difficult because of the way I portray him. And, you know, the thing about narcissistic sociopaths is they care very much about their image. And if you take a shot at their image, it makes them very angry. So I think he would be very angry about the show.
So you're going to enter the, you know, the hallowed halls of Putin and let's name a whole bunch of other people. And he's going to fire a tweet at you after the show.
Oh, Lyrilyn Kay is insane. Don't let her in anywhere.
And finally, what's your invitation to people here in the UK to come and see your show?
I think that the show offers an opportunity to laugh at things that otherwise might drive us crazy, and that it also, I mean, I'm taking some huge personal risks, and I'm not doing that in a tell-all. It's purposefully, we build community when we tell the truth. So I think that at the end of the show, people will feel opened up and moved and inspired, right? So it's like I said, it's light on its feet. I think people will feel great after they leave.
Okay, so finally a chance to get some real value out of Donald Trump. Thanks very much for talking to Fringe Review.